And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Derek Van Riper flying solo here on this Sunday. Just three more weeks, including this one, to make changes in weekly leagues before this fantasy baseball season is put to bed. And if you said, hey, DVR, what is your greatest fear? My first answer would probably be something along the lines of hosting all the podcasts by myself. Fortunately, I don't have to do that. We've got a lot going on right now with the September baseball football overlap. And this week, I'm going to try and show you a little bit more about my process while walking through different players that I think are interesting for the upcoming week. So first things first, the first page I open any week that I'm going to do pickups is the projected starters page over at RotoWire. So if you are watching this on YouTube, I'll pop that up on the screen so you can kind of follow along and, again, take a walk inside how my mind works as I'm looking for players to use for the upcoming week. Now, there's a couple things you can do with this grid that are really important. I think when you open it up, it will open to the current day. You hit the customize grid button, you can jump in and actually choose the day that's coming up. Monday, if you're doing this on Saturday, you can do the same thing. Pick the actual day you want the grid to start showing you the schedule. Hit the show starters button, and then you get the screen that I'm on right now. We'll do this kind of A to Z style, starting with Arizona, breezing through, looking for anybody of interest that could help us out down the stretch. Obviously, Zach Gallen, long gone in leagues, two-start pitcher this week, two really tough matchups. Bigger question there would be whether or not you actually want to use him for those two matchups. I would try to avoid it if you're in a position where you're protecting ratios. Obviously, feel comfortable using him if you're chasing at this point. If you're not in the top three and you need to gain points, you have to take a lot of chances. It's going to be a common theme that you hear on pretty much any fantasy baseball show at this point. Now, Luke Weaver, not in this matchup. There's no way I would do it, again, unless I'm in that situation where it doesn't matter if I'm wrong. I don't see that being a good start for him. Obviously, the Dodgers are great. Tyler Gilbert, not throwing him against Houston. It's pretty bad matchups all around for the Arizona pitchers. Merrill Kelly could be back on Wednesday, also against the Dodgers. Not a lot of interest there. But if we go down to the Atlanta rotation for this week, Touki Toussaint is, I think, a little bit challenging because earlier on in the second half of the season, it looked like he was starting to figure some things out. So far, 43 Ks in 46 innings this season, 4.11 ERA, 1.24 WHIP. That all sounds decent and usable. And a matchup against Colorado at home, I'd throw almost anybody against the Rockies outside of Coors. My only concern with Touki has been that he's been going short in his last couple of starts. Four walks last time out in a good spot against the Nationals. But the overall body of work here, he's gone five enough times throughout the second half of the season where I think he can go five and give us a shot at a win. So I think Touki is worth picking up, even in 12-team leagues. It's got a tough second start if you're in a weekly league going on the road to San Francisco. The strange thing is, even though that park is not as pitcher-friendly as it has been in the past, I would much rather throw a pitcher at the Giants in that ballpark than in a more hitter-friendly environment. So again, deeper leagues, I do think you can throw Touki out there if he happens to be on the wire. Wascarino Noah, probably long gone, has that great first matchup against Colorado, but doesn't have to catch the Giants over the weekend. Has a nice two-start week the following week, though, getting Arizona and then getting San Diego. So Noah has a lot of appeal beyond this week if he happens to be out there. This happens a lot in more shallow formats, especially. A player gets hurt, misses a lot of time. They come back later in the season. A fewer number of teams actually cares about the league at that point, and he kind of slips by on the wire for a couple of weeks before someone picks him up. I know in more competitive leagues and high-stakes leagues, he was scooped up as soon as he came back. Let's move on to the Orioles here. Of course, not much to see. John Means is a two-start pitcher this week. I'm really not excited about Means in these matchups. He's got the Yankees at home. Red Sox on the road. I think you may have to play him in some spots. I would, again, try not to if possible. I looked into Chris Ellis a little bit, and I can't explain why he's got a 2.08 ERA right now, so I'm not going to tell you it's a good idea to throw him against the Yankees either. Keegan Agin, Zach Lowther, these guys, you want nothing to do with them, even if you're chasing at this point, even chasing volume at this point. They are not going to help you. Looking at the Red Sox, Tanner Houck might still be out there in some really shallow leagues. He's on the road at Seattle this week. I think the question some people might be wondering about is, what do you do with Eduardo Rodriguez at Seattle, home against Baltimore? That's two really nice spots. I'm comfortable using him. I know it's been a really disappointing season, and he's coming off of a pretty bad start last time out against the Rays, but this is a guy that will go 6-plus when he's pitching well. I'm willing to take that chance because I think these matchups are enticing enough to actually take on that risk. Let's go to the Cubs for a moment. Adrian Sampson is a guy I've just never believed in. On the road in Philly, don't want any part of that. On the road in Milwaukee against the Brewers team, it's starting to put up runs in bunches in recent weeks. I don't want anything to do with that either, so he's probably one of the worst possible two-start options because of the matchups, but even the baseline skills there are a bit questionable. You could maybe get away with Davies or Steele on the road in Milwaukee. I hope you don't have to do it, but I'd put them near the absolute bottom of your list of anyone you'd be bidding on, just given how poorly Davies has pitched this year. And I think with Steele, there's still a little more correction coming with that ERA. He's probably more of a low to mid fours guy when it's all said and done. Looking at Cincinnati, this is a rotation that's largely rostered everywhere, but if they're not, if you're in a shallow enough league where Vladimir Gutierrez, maybe even Wade Miley are still out there on the road in Pittsburgh to start the week, the only drawback, if you're in that Miley situation I described, that second start is a home start against the Dodgers. But Miley's been really good this year, sitting with a sub-3 ERA. I wonder if Miley just continues to get a bad rap because of how things went for him during his time in Boston. You know, you look back at even some of the numbers he was putting up in Baltimore, too. Those were even worse. But he's been good, really, ever since 2018 with Milwaukee. I mean, between the Brewers, the Astros, and the Reds, those are three teams that we really trust with pitching. If you didn't trust Wade Miley by now, hopefully, if you have a chance to pick him up, you can actually do it because this is a pretty good week. I think the Pittsburgh start can offset the Dodgers start in this instance. Looking at Cleveland, it's been a mixed bag for them. Aaron Civale, though, nice to get him back. Took the loss in his first start back. Did have 6 Ks in just 4 2/3 innings. I think usually the thing I like most about Civale is that he should get you a lot of volume. That can offset what is occasionally a low strikeout rate. Only 82 Ks in 102 innings so far for Aaron Civale, and it's a two-start week. At Minnesota, certainly not the team we expect them to be. It's been the case going back to the early part of the second half of the season. On the road against the Yankees, if you compare Civale to even Wade Miley, I'd be just as comfortable with Civale than I would be with Miley. And there's a better with Miley. There's a good chance that Savali's actually still out there in a good number of leagues because of the amount of time that he missed with an injury. And kind of looking back to some of the other two-start pitchers, I mean, Aaron Civale over Tuki Toussaint, for sure. If you were looking at Zach Allen for your lineup already and saw Civale on the wire, I would actually pick up Civale to play over Gallen for this week, even though I like Gallen's long-term future. Other thing I should mention, too, it's another thing I like about the projected starters grid that RotoWire puts together, is you can actually see the next week's matchups for everybody and what it's likely to be based on the current order. This time of year, things change a lot. But if you see Zach Gallen sitting there next week with a matchup against the Dodgers, you're probably not going to feel great about throwing him there. So you can start to look ahead and see these next two or three starts that are going to end a player's season, and you might drop a player like that, even though Zach Gallen's a guy that we could see as a top 20 starting pitcher going into 2022 again. I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that he can be really good. Cal Quantrill probably long gone a lot of places. Tristan McKenzie has just been a different pitcher in the second half. I mean, reaching completely new levels. If you look back at what he has done his last 60 days, he's got a 3.50 ERA and a 0.8 whip. It's phenomenal. 52-9 strikeout to walk ratio, so just under a strikeout per inning. Still giving up some home runs. Actually hasn't given up a home run though in his last 4 starts. So 8 home runs in those last 54 innings, but he's even kind of moved away from that. Schedule might be a factor in the more recent improvement with the home run rate, specifically having faced the Twins, Royals, Angels, and Tigers in those last 4 starts. But Tristan McKenzie looking every bit as good as I and a few people had hoped he'd be earlier in the season. Unfortunately, a lot of us had to drop him before we had a chance to get that payoff. And then if you look ahead to the following week, McKenzie is going to be a two-start pitcher. So if you're in a shallow enough league where he's still out there, I think he's worth picking up for the start against Minnesota, because you're probably going to want to use him for the two-step next week too. Looking at Colorado, they are on the road all week, which gives you a little more interest in streaming. I still can't explain John Gray's worse road splits over the last 3 years. It just completely befuddles me. On the road at Atlanta, on the road at Washington, not bad matchups, especially the second one. I think you could do it if you're chasing bulk. I would put him probably just below the Gallen line in this case. I'd rather take a good pitcher with tough matchups than a below average pitcher in good matchups if I had to kind of pick in a vacuum. Antonio Senzatella, it's kind of sneaky, useful. I wish he had the Washington matchup, though, instead of Atlanta, so I'm trying to avoid streaming him if at all possible, because I think that's a pretty dangerous spot since Atlanta still has a lot to play for. Moving on to the White Sox, Ronaldo Lopez is one of the only pitchers that's widely available of this bunch, and I think there's actually one thing I can do here to make this a little easier to see. I've got some leagues uploaded into RotoWire's custom tool, and you can see now there's some gray highlights if you're watching on YouTube. It flags all the players that are rostered. Guys in green are on your roster, players in gray are on someone else's roster, and then players that are not highlighted at all are actually available. The league that I'm using for the purposes of this show happens to be a 12-team online championship league, so it gives you an idea just of who's widely available, and at least flag a few more interesting names for us to talk about. But Ronaldo Lopez, the stuff is better than it ever has been. It's really just a fastball slider mix, but both pitches seem to be working really well for him right now, and he's locating consistently. We were talking about Tristan McKenzie just a moment ago and the improvements he's made with his control. I mean, to see just 11 walks in the last 44 innings from Ronaldo Lopez, I think that's really encouraging, since walks were such a huge part of why he failed to deliver on our high expectations a couple of seasons ago back in 2018 and 2019. So I'm definitely in on Ronaldo Lopez. That Angels lineup is putrid. You see guys like Jack Mayfield popping up in the cleanup spot right now. They are absolutely just playing out the string at this point and trying to move on to 2022. So take advantage of that with Ronaldo Lopez, one of the best single start streamers where available, keywords always, but especially this time of year. Looking at the Tigers starters, home against Milwaukee, you got Willy Peralta, Matt Manning, and Tyler Alexander. Peralta gets a second start on the road against the Rays, and I got to shout out Ian Kahn again, because when Peralta first came back, he was pointing out right away that Peralta was really effective and looked really good, and a big part of that, of course, has been that splitter. We've only seen him go more than five innings once in his last four turns. It's got a couple of difficult starts sprinkled in there. The one difficult start, the most difficult start, was the one that he pitched the best in. That was on the road against the Blue Jays. Wonder if the league might be figuring him out just a little bit. So you do want to be careful in general with a guy like this. But I think Peralta is playable in deeper leagues where he's still out there. In a 12 like this, I think this exact team that I pulled up is a couple spots out of a cash position right now. Just getting bulk, getting a chance at two wins, getting a chance at those Ks, and maybe getting lucky with the ratios is probably worth it if you're in a situation like that. So I would put Willy Peralta in play for a league like this. Maybe a little less interested if I'm in that protecting ratio situation that I described just a little while ago. Looking at Houston, most members of that rotation widely rostered. The only one who might be available in some shallow leagues is Jose Urquidy, unless you play in a league with me, in which case he's been rostered probably longer than he should have been when he was hurt. On the road at Texas, absolutely take that. Maybe there's a chance Jake Odorizzi has been dropped as more of a streaming type in some shallow leagues. You want to play him in this matchup as well. I would say he's right up there. Both Urquidy and Odorizzi are up in that same sort of level with Ronaldo Lopez in terms of their appeal given the matchup that they have this week. Odorizzi gets a second start too against Arizona, so that bumps him up even further because it's a home start. The Diamondbacks don't really scare us at all, and I know we have major concerns about Odorizzi the third time through the lineup against teams that are that bad. There's a better chance the Astros have a huge lead. As a result, they might actually let him pitch a little deeper into that game than they would if it were a close, low-scoring sort of game. Let's take a look at the Royals. The always available Mike Minor, home against Oakland. Is there anything in the recent numbers that gives me any hope about Mike Minor turning things around down the stretch. Actually is. If you look at his last 60 days, he's got a 46-8 strikeout to walk ratio and 52 and a third innings, a 3.78 ERA and a 1.09 WHIP. Almost always goes five. That's the other thing too. At least gives himself a shot to get a win, even though he has not had a win since July 26th. Currently, a lot on the line for the A's, just kind of cling to their playoff hopes. So not the easiest matchup in the world for Mike Minor, but it's also at home and volume's what you're looking for at this point. So I think he's kind of a viable option, which is not something I say, even though I see him always in white as I go through this process each and every week looking for the available starters. The Angels, Packy Naughton, two starts, one on the road against the White Sox, one at home against Oakland. I think this could be a correction week for Naughton. It's really a command-first sort of profile. It's not a lot to get excited about. And given the Angels' inability to score runs, too, I think he's near the bottom of the list in terms of two-start pitchers that would be in consideration for this week.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Dodgers brought back Tony Gonsolin. He's got a home start against Arizona. If you look, he only went three in that first opportunity back against the Cardinals. I think it was 55 pitches that he threw. So if you figure another 15 to 20 next time out, that gives him 70 to 75. It puts him right on the borderline as a streamer. I think it's hard to go five with a limitation like that, but against a bad team, I'm more willing to take the chance. I just wouldn't bid that much for Gonsolin in this case because you're not going to want to use him next week. The start next week is at Colorado. So this is a pure pitch and ditch situation if Tony Gonsolin is out there in your league. And I would still rank several of the players I've talked about so far ahead of him in the priority list if you're using a FAB system where you're just stacking everybody up like that. Moving down to the Marlins, Jesus Luzardo, maybe beginning to turn a corner. It is a fastball problem for Luzardo, has been really all season long, but just tied his season high with 8 strikeouts against the Mets his last time out. I think that's a really encouraging sign. He's had a run of 6 straight starts at home, so just a really fortunate schedule for him. Going on the road to face a watered-down Nationals lineup, that's a spot where you could definitely think about him. Comparing him even just to Gonsolin straight up, I think you almost prefer Luzardo only because you're not worried about the possibility of a workload restriction keeping him from being eligible to get the win. So slowly but surely, I'm beginning to trust Luzardo a little bit more. I think it's got to be at least a 12-team league. Anything more shallow than that, there's probably still too much risk to actually throw him out there in most circumstances. The rest of that Marlins rotation, pretty heavily rostered and for good reason. Edward Cabrera has been struggling. If he's been dropped, he's got a home start against Pittsburgh. I would actually throw him back out there in that situation. Moving on to the Brewers, Adrian Hauser and Eric Lauer are the two that are actually available. Lauer is one of those guys, when I watch him, I never really see anything that stands out to me, and it's weird because he's getting great results. 3.18 ERA, 1.18 WHIP now. He's gone 7 in back-to-back starts. That was against the Phillies and the Giants, too, so two teams that have plenty to play for, and maybe it's a slightly below-average K rate in the long run, but I think this is actually a profile that is beginning to work just based on the way that the Brewers are using him. I mean, a home start for him against the Cubs. That's a horrible Cubs lineup right now. I think Lauer is a possible like top 5 sort of streamer, depending on the number of options that are available in your league. And there's Adrian Hauser right here, too. He's widely available, at least in 12-team leagues. Probably the more downside with the WHIP, as we've seen throughout his career. I mean, Lauer, I think, has him by full like 0.1 in that category, because Adrian Hauser has 58 walks in 127 and a third innings this season, including 5 last time out. against Cleveland. You go through the game log, a 5, a 0, a 3, 2, and 5. So definitely a skill that is wobbly for him right now. Of the two, I definitely prefer Lauer if you're looking at them. Both have that same nice matchup against the Cubs. Looking forward, Hauser gets the Cardinals the following week. Lauer lined up to get the Mets. I think I'd be more likely to throw Hauser the following week, but we're really kind of playing it week to week in a situation like this because there's not a ton that separates those two guys skills-wise. Looking at Minnesota, we've talked about Joe Ryan, I think, on this podcast at least each of the last 2 weeks. Joe Ryan is a guy you want to get if he's out there. This week, he's going to be home against Cleveland. It's a fastball-heavy profile, but guys just don't seem to see it all that well. So I think you can throw him out there. I think he's actually going to compare pretty favorably to Lauer and Hauser. I think there's some long-term appeal here, too, because Joe Ryan's next start will be on the road against the Cubs. Easy spot for him, pitcher-friendly environment. I think the other question you might be thinking about if you're looking at Twins this week is Griffin Jacks, and he's got an ERA near 7. He's home against Cleveland. This is really more of a I'm not worried about ratios and I'm leaning into the schedule situation. I think Al Melchior wrote about him for the Next Week in Fantasy Baseball column, and it just keeps getting easier for Jacks as well with Cleveland and then the Cubs the following week. I think he's got the Royals coming up the last week of the season too, so really no difficult spots for him, but you got to be in a pretty deep league to throw him out there given the inconsistency we've seen from him so far. A lot of people wonder about Rich Hill when he's available. I trust him more than most. I always pick him up and end up keeping him a lot longer than I expect to. He's got St. Louis and Philadelphia both as part of a two-start week. No hesitation in picking him up where you can. Moving on to the Yankees, Luis Gil has a two-start week potentially. They've got injuries, of course, there. Jameson Taillon status for the upcoming week still unknown with that ankle injury. If you get Gil against the Twins and against Cleveland, those are good matchups. I know it was a bit of a mess for him against the Jays earlier in the week. I didn't think the control would fall apart quite like that, but 7 walks and 3 1/3 innings, probably going to scare some people away in leagues where he's still out there. I think there's more good than bad in this profile. Eno's stuff plus number loves this guy's arsenal. I think it's going to be just kind of an up and down ride because we have seen some control issues from him at AAA as well. These are matchups in which I would be comfortable taking a chance on Gil, but understand there is pretty clear risk given that profile. As far as the other starters go for the Yankees, really nothing to get excited about on the wire at this point since everybody's been on Nestor Cortes now for a while. If you happen to be out there, no hesitation throwing him against Baltimore. Looks like he's got a two-start week potentially coming up the following week. Home against the Rangers, road against the Red Sox, so he'll continue to be a part of lineups here down the stretch. Looking at Oakland, Paul Blackburn's a guy I've just never trusted. I have no interest in him whatsoever, but Cole Irvin is out there in my 12-teamer that you can see on the screen in leagues where he's available. He's absolutely playable. Kind of fits more into the Adrian Hauser profile for me. Just more of a back-end sort of guy that is matchup-dependent consistently. But he gets Seattle at home next week, too. So probably two spots in a row where you're going to feel good about Cole Irvin. So I know it's been a bumpy ride for him in the second half, but I'd be interested in him in leagues where he's available. Looking at Philly, Bailey Falter is lined up for a start, I think, next weekend against the Mets. The problem with Falter has been they've not been using him like a regular starter, so I doubt there's a chance he'd even pitch deep enough into that game to be eligible for the win. They would almost have to throw an opener in front of him. If they pitch him 3 or 4 innings against the Mets, that's important because next week he's home against the Pirates. So more of a watch list guy for me, and I'm kind of intrigued by the profile, but I'm also not interested enough to stash him in most circumstances. If you look at the Pirates this week, they got that home series against the Reds. Dylan Peters gets 2 starts. He's got the Reds and he's got the Marlins. I think he's useful in deeper leagues, but I don't think we're ever going to get strikeouts from him. So I think you can throw him out there, but he's like a near min-bid sort of guy. Most money's been spent by now in fab leagues anyway. But I see Peters as more of an innings eater with a lot of skills risk. So just be very careful if you're thinking about throwing him out there. I'm surprised to see Chris Paddock out there in this particular 12-team league just because of the name recognition at San Francisco. Yeah, you could throw him there, but he's more of a back half of the list streamer than someone that you're actively going to go after. If you look down here, you got Jake Arrieta, no interest in that two-start week whatsoever at San Francisco and at St. Louis. The Mariners have Tyler Anderson going up against Boston. He gets them at home. I know the Boston Red Sox lineup has been a mess because of the COVID outbreak they've been dealing with. I don't really want to throw a lefty against them if I can avoid it. So I'd err on the side of not using Anderson, even though I really liked him so far this year. I do think for the two-start week that he's got the following week, though, at Oakland, at the Angels, I think we could be looking at him as a shallow league two-start week streamer for those spots. He's been really good overall this season, just a pleasant surprise in the back of the rotation for the Pirates and now for the Mariners. If we look at San Francisco, not much to get excited about here. Sammy Long is a pitcher that I think we generally believe in longer term. He's not been getting enough innings to actually work like a regular starter, so we're passing on Sammy Long with that home opportunity against San Diego. Scott Kazmir is a great story, and I have no interest in throwing him, even though it's two home starts against the Padres and Atlanta. Looking here at the Cardinals, Jake Woodford has emerged to take on a spot in the rotation here late in the season. At the Mets is actually somewhat playable in really deep leagues, like 15-teamers. I don't know if we have any sort of shallow league appeal here before season's end. He could get a two-start week, though, next week with both on the road against the Brewers and Cubs. I'm a little surprised to see Drew Rasmussen is available in 12s at this point. I didn't expect when the Rays acquired him as part of that Willy Adames deal that he was going to be anywhere near the rotation, but he has been. He's gone 5-2 of his last three starts. He's made some pretty good appearances against tough lineups too. Seen a ton of the Red Sox, and they haven't really been able to do a whole lot against him yet. I think that bodes really well just for Rasmussen maybe staying at that five inning range for these last couple of turns. The problem here is the matchups at Toronto. I mean, that's the second best lineup in the league right now. It's a team you want nothing to do with. They put up 11 runs in the seventh inning on the back end of that doubleheader on Saturday night, and they don't strike out that much. They score at will, and they hit more home runs than anybody. So you have to be really careful here with Rasmussen. Ideally, you're in a situation where you can just pick him up later in the week, throw him out there against the Tigers. If I had to make a call on this, I would say he's probably viable in a 12 where you're not protecting your ratios. Anything more shallow than that, probably too much risk with that Jays start for Rasmussen. But showing us a pretty nice profile in the extended role for the Rays. The often talked about Rangers starters for this week, AJ Alexi, I mean, the way they're lining this up right now, RotoWire's got him with seven starters stretched out, just giving everybody a look. AJ Alexi, who gets Houston at home, I don't want to mess with Houston with Alexi. I know it's a clean zero ERA so far. It is not a profile that lends itself to being dominant. It is actually one that still needs some work. So I'd stay far, far away from AJ Alexi. He's probably even rostered in some leagues because of the success he's had already, but don't pick him up for that spot. He's also got the Yankees on the road next week. I want nothing to do with that as well. So as great as the story has been so far, be careful with AJ Alexi. I don't really like any of the Rangers pitchers this week because the second matchup of the week is a home matchup against the White Sox. So I'm not really interested in Taylor Hearn or Glenn Otto where available, or even Colby Allard, who occasionally pops up as a useful option for easier spots. Looking at the Jays, none of their starters are available anywhere. Maybe Steven Matz is an exception a few places. I'd absolutely stream him at home against that Minnesota lineup. And then, of course, we end with the Nationals. Paulo Espino gets two starts this week, home against the Marlins, home against the Rockies. I don't like the pitcher, but I actually do like these matchups quite a bit. So if you're looking at, you know, guys like Lauer and Hauser who only have the one start versus Espino and you need volume, there's a stronger case for Espino, even though some of those other names we talked about are clearly better pitchers. So I think he is a viable near min bid sort of option because of these matchups, but not a guy I would use in the protect the ratios scenario that I keep referring to. So that's how I go through pitchers every week, right? I just go through the grid. I try to find anybody who's available of interest and see, like, what's the recent form look like? What does the matchup going beyond this week look like? And that really helps me guide where I'm going to go with my bids and how much appeal I have. Because you can see a pretty clear difference with the more marginal guys. If they're going to be on your roster for more than one lineup period, that's going to inform your bidding a lot. And hopefully this is something that helps more beyond this season. I just thought this would be an interesting way to share a little more insight as to how do you break it all down? How do you attack this problem each and every week? How do you know what's going on with every team? I use tools that I think are really helpful along the way to make that job a little bit easier. And I think the The thing with bats, that's a little bit different. We'll talk about some hitters now for a bit. There's not a schedule tool quite like that. You can look at weekly projections, and you can do a lot of different things to try and dig up players that are playing more. I think one of the tools that RotoWire has, and this is not an ad for RotoWire, this is just a tool that I use all the time now too, is this playing time changes chart. Again, if you're watching on YouTube, you can kind of get a look at this. But if you look at the playing time changes chart, it includes a few things. It includes players that were called up who are playing more. It includes guys that are playing more because of injuries. And it includes guys that have come back from injuries, right? So if you see on the screen, George Springer is one of the guys who's increased in playing time the most in recent days because he was hurt. He's back. Now he's playing a lot. But then you see other names like Jonathan Daza, G-Man Choi, Daniel Vogelbach. You see guys that are actually pretty widely available and potentially very useful. Of course, knowing that the Rockies are on the road all week, that would temper my interest in Daza quite a bit, but he's one of those guys. If you hadn't noticed he was playing a lot and the Rockies were at home, this would be a great way to jump on board with him as somebody that would actually help you quite a bit. I think the thing I'm always looking for are actual prospects that came up. This point in the year, there aren't that many. I did get a question about Seth Beer earlier in the week from one of our listeners, Jim. And I think Beer might be one of the last few kind of keeper dynasty worthy prospects to come up in the final weeks of the season. He actually hit a home run as a pinch hitter in his debut on Friday, which was pretty awesome. This is a guy that should be a part of their plan next year. You know, we assume universal DH league-wide for the 2022 season. It's not a given, of course, but once the new CBA is finally worked out, wouldn't surprise me at all if you had, you know, Beer and Christian Walker playing together in Arizona. And I think you could also see a case where maybe Christian Walker, because of arbitration, is at a point where Arizona doesn't want to keep him around much longer. They make a trade, they non-tender him, and they want to go younger. That could happen too. The one thing that I would be careful about is that Beer was previously playing in the outfield in the minors, like in previous seasons. This year, he hasn't played out there at all. So I don't think they really view him as a guy that's going to play well in the outfield long term. But clearly, there's plenty of power here in the profile. We're talking about a guy that over a full season at AAA was on pace for about 25 home runs. Yeah, it's Reno, but he's hit everywhere he's been. He's shown good plate skills too. Nice high OBPs. So I think Seth Beer is exactly the kind of player that a team like Arizona should be giving a long look during the final weeks of the season. And, you know, he's actually got that long-term appeal because we don't know. We don't know how they're going to handle Christian Walker. I know that a first baseman like that doesn't carry a lot of value on the trade market, but if you're in Arizona's position, you probably want to get younger and see what he brings. So I would agree he is a good pickup for any sort of long-term formats. The other thing that's really cool, though, about this playing time changes chart is you can actually sort it by position. So if you're looking for a catcher and you want to see who's playing more behind the plate, you can get a look. Now, this is one of those weeks where catcher is kind of gross. Kiebert Ruiz is actually day-to-day again. He got hit in the head with a pitch on the helmet. So fortunately, the initial tests are encouraging. You're not necessarily going to get a high volume of Ruiz in the immediate future, but I think he's another one of those young players, and obviously a big part of the future in Washington, where they want to give him an extended look right now. They don't want to play Riley Adams any more than they have to. They want to see how ready Kiebert Ruiz is to translate that minor league production into meaningful big league production. And I know Al and Beller talked about it last week. This is a guy that hits for average, gets on base, and was showing more power than ever with the 21 home runs that he hit at AAA earlier this season. So Kiebert Ruiz does have some appeal, even in shallow one-catcher leagues, if you're struggling to get meaningful production at that position. But as you can see, not a lot of shifts in playing time overall. A lot of splits right now. It's late in the year. Teams just don't want to put too much mileage on their catchers, even good teams, because they want them to be fresh for the playoffs. So it's hard to find guys that are standing out on a playing time front. If you move over to first base, I mentioned Seth Beer before. I think that's ultimately where he fits the best. G-Man Choi, I mean, he's a schedule-dependent player. So one thing I would also say that you can do with that projected starters grid is you can see if there are any matchups that are just really good for the week, kind of eyeball it. You can see lefty-righty on that grid, which I find really helpful. And in the case of G-Man Choi, we know he plays a lot more against righties. So in the case of the Rays, you know, I would look over there and say, okay, we got Manoa, Berríos, Mize, and Willy Peralta. 7 games, only 4 righties. So in weekly leagues, G-Man Choi is not necessarily a great pickup, even though he is picking up a little extra playing time right now. We know the same generally holds up for Dan Vogelback too. But also, like, you look at him, and this is a week where they've got two off days and they've got one lefty. So same kind of situation as Choi. Only four actual matchups against righties for Dan Vogelback. So mediocre plays as a result of their schedules. And that's why those guys are as available as they often are. Moving over to second base, let's see if we have anyone here. Tony Kemp's playing a bit more. Gavin Lux is back up. And I still worry that Lux isn't going to play as much as I'd hoped at the beginning of the season. I think we need to see what the offseason brings for him. I'd have to be in a 15-team league or deeper to be interested. If there's any sort of long-term format where he may have been cut, maybe like a 10 or 12-team keeper league where you keep 10 guys, there's a chance he's your last keeper. But even then, I think there's probably a better chance that someone else is more valuable and you can draft him, Lux, back at a cheaper cost in the spring. But when you look at the Dodgers right now, they are going to move Lux around defensively a bit more. He's played two games in left field since coming back. You know, Pollock's down right now, so I think that could be the path that Gavin Lux is looking for. I would imagine as they face lefties, they'll probably back off him a little bit. Looking at their upcoming schedule, they've actually got five out of their six matchups in the upcoming week against righties. So it actually could be a good week for Gavin Lux, but you may have to think of him more as a streamer and matchup-based play for these last couple weeks of the season than as somebody who's actually going to be an impact player, you know, each and every week, which is disappointing. But the long-term outlook for him is still pretty bright.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Not a lot of other big changes at second base either. Tommy La Stella playing a tick more. I mean, he's fine. Like, you kind of know what he brings to the table at this point. Moving over to third base, Yu Chang still playing a lot in Cleveland. It makes sense. There's no reason not to play him if you're in Cleveland's position. Definitely a guy that, if you gave him a full season's worth of playing time, probably pops 15 to 20 home runs. I'm a little surprised the batting average has been in the 220s. I think there's maybe a little more room there, but at the same time, I don't know if there's a whole lot of appeal outside of AL-only leagues for Yu Chang at this point. Moving over to shortstop, Richie Martin's playing more. Unfortunately, I just don't think there's a whole lot to get excited about with him, but I think Jose Barrero is a guy that, as a result of Kyle Farmer being on the paternity list, I'd like him if the Reds had a spot for him. He's just an extra fill-in guy right now, so we can't really trust him in mixed leagues. I think the reason I'm talking about Barrero right now is similar to the appeal we talked about with Seth Beer. Even if you're not necessarily interested in him for this year, if you're playing in a league with a lot of keepers and Barrero's still out there, he could actually help you in the future because he could actually be a big part of what the Reds are doing in 2022. Looking over at the outfield to see if anyone's popping on the playing time front. I mentioned Daza before. With them being on the road, he's probably a pass for me. Leody Taveras could still be out there in some shallow leagues, and I know it's been a really disappointing season for him as a guy that was expected to deliver a lot of speed for us over the course of this season. The numbers at AAA were perplexing. 87 games, 17 home runs. It's AAA. You know, it's the former PCL. The ball flies in a lot of those parks. 13 steals, still offering that part of his game. He's 13 for 18. A 245 average, but a 343 OBP and a 475 slug. I mean, that's really the OBP and the slug, especially. It's about as good as it's ever been for Leody Taveras in the minors. He had a 368 OBP at high A, his second time at the level back in 2019, but he wasn't showing power like this. I wonder if there's still another level here. A big part of this is just age to level, right? He's 23 years old, just turned 23 a couple of days ago. Clearly a guy the Rangers see as part of their long-term future. I would say of the hitters we've talked about so far, because there are so many ways for him to make value, I'm absolutely interested in him, even though it's been all struggles for him for the most part at the big league level this season. Does have a nice little six-game hitting streak going, though. Perhaps starting to figure some things out this time around at the highest level. Feel free to drop in questions, by the way. Oh, and there's Jim right there. Too early for beer? Yeah, well, I mean, for me it is on the West Coast, but it's going to be a long day. That's part of it too, right? NFL's kicking off today, so I'll have that running once the game start. Got a couple more pods to do a bit later, but looking here for some other names to possibly throw out there in the outfield. It's a thin week, and that's the story in September. You're just digging through, hoping to find someone playing a bit more. I think the other thing I can do that often helps me find some playing time, this is another common technique. I'm going to switch my screen over. You guys can see how terrible my NFBC teams are. A lot of teams just scrapping, trying to find their way into the money. You know, a lot of sixes and fours and eights. They've got a 10 in there. That was for a draft champions league. A main event qualifier where if you're not first, you're last. I don't know if I can make up enough ground there. But I'll pull up this OC, which is actually pretty close. I'm in sixth, but I think all six teams are within just a handful of points of first place. I like to go to the free agent page and actually sort by at-bats. Of course, you got to whittle that down. 7 days or 14 days usually gets the job done. And you'll start to see a whole other group of players that are actually available, which obviously results vary by league anyway. But Elcides Escobar, just a pure filler guy right now. I don't really see any reason to believe what he's doing right now is going to last. Lane Thomas still out there. This is a 12-teamer. I think that's why he's still there. I think in 15-teamers, he's mostly gone. Never really had a prolonged opportunity in St. Louis, and clearly with the way the organization has soured, at least temporarily, on Victor Robles, plenty of playing time for Lane Thomas out there. So I would say he's actually very much playable in a more shallow format. The matchups, you know, this week, 3 against Miami, 3 against Colorado. So a nice 6-game week. I wouldn't be surprised if Lane Thomas starts all 6 of those games. Odubel Herrera, still out there in a lot of leagues. Look, if you want to roster him. I don't really want to win because of that guy. So I just kind of move on. Like in this league, the Odie's available. I'd rather take a chance on catching some lightning in a bottle with Leody Taveras, because I think the payoff could be much greater. Another interesting name for more shallow leagues, I know he's gone in deeper leagues, is Brian De La Cruz. You can see he's playing a lot for the Marlins right now. And I think with De La Cruz, I'm interested because I should say this with the following warning. If you see players who have low or really good strikeout rates in the upper levels in the minor leagues, it's still obviously a good thing. I think it's dangerous to assume that first-time big leaguers are going to come anywhere close to their minor league K rates as they get up to the highest level. And I think you've heard people probably talk about this throughout the season. The gap between AAA and the big leagues might be as wide as it's ever been. So I think when you look at De La Cruz and you see a lot of like sub 20% or near 20% K rates in the minors and pretty good walk rates, it's easy to just throw like a pretty nice play discipline profile on him. And I think he has that, but I think it just takes some time for it to materialize for a lot of young players. So I think with De La Cruz, the appeal for me is really more that he has shown us a little bit of everything at various stops. The underlying numbers, yeah, those are good, but it's sort of like the Leody Taveras situation where we've seen power added on top of a little bit of speed, right? Different profile, but being able to touch all the categories makes me more willing to take a chance on a player at this time of year because there's so many ways they can kind of fall into some actual value. Looking a little further down, the names get pretty ugly pretty fast. It's nice to see Brandon Marsh playing a lot more. I don't think there's a lot of appeal outside of keeper formats right now because he's going through that adjustment phase. And the other word of caution I would throw out there is if you have a prospect who missed a lot of time because of injuries, and that's absolutely the case with Brandon Marsh because of that shoulder, the adjustment phase for a player like that could be even longer. We're talking about long adjustments for healthy guys. Imagine being rusty. Imagine not being physically 100% throughout the offseason. You're playing catch up against the best possible competition. It's a really difficult thing to do. Nice to see Tommy La Stella available here, though. I mentioned, you know, Aseydis Escobar playing more right now. I'd rather actually use La Stella in most circumstances because I think the team context is better and there's a much better chance that you're actually going to get something in all the categories other than steals. I think La Stella is just a much better hitter. And I just trust that so much more. Now, I think if I want to look at the other pitchers that are available, went through them kind of A to Z before. Yeah, there you can see Cole Irvin still out there, Paddock's out there in this league. I don't think I want Paddock for that matchup, as I said earlier. A little surprised to see Giovanni Gallegos out there. Dylan Floro still there. Those guys have been getting some saves. I think this is the other way to find out, like, well, who else has been picking up rogue saves? Joe Barlow's been doing it for a little while now in Texas and, you know, not a good team, but seems like he's got a pretty clear handle on maybe taking the job to begin 2022 as they look to fill that out. Tyler Wells, to me, more of just a guy. I don't really want to trust anybody here in Baltimore, but look at that, 1% rostered right now. Just a guy that no one trusts at all. Hansel Robles, not really going to get a lot in Boston. Rowan Wick's probably the other name that I think is worth talking about here. One save in the last week. Cubs aren't going to win a lot in their current form, but Rowan Wick's got good stuff, and he's missed a lot of time this year with injuries. So I would say of all the relievers that you will see that are available in more leagues, he's probably the most interesting if we're talking about, you know, Barlow versus Wells versus Robles versus Wick versus Cole Seltzer. But if you start getting the Gallegos and Floro types in there, especially, clear upper hands to Gallegos and Floro. If you didn't see the news, like, the Cardinals are going to try and stretch out Alex Reyes a little bit, so Gallegos might not have any real competition for those saves the rest of the way. He was good enough to be used as a non-closer reliever earlier in the season, so I wouldn't be surprised if you know, people go pretty aggressive after him if they have any money left for these final few weeks, because he could be just as good as any other closer in the pool over a limited amount of time. Doesn't look like anybody dropped any questions here on the stream, but I will check on Twitter real quick to see if there's anything else that we should cover before we go. It's the most fun time of the year because you're papering over holes. Great time to be a sports fan, of course, with everything running all at once. But really, it's because you can take these chances on players you ordinarily wouldn't roster, and you can end up with pretty good teams that just play more than your competition, right? So if you just keep kind of following through, making sure you don't have any holes in your lineup is important all season. It's extra important this time of year because so many things change last minute. So you got to keep an eye on the news, and you got to be quick to actually, you know, make those adjustments to avoid missing partial weeks or missing full weeks from your banged up players. So that is going to wrap things up for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Again, facing my fears, doing the solo thing. Al's back with me next week. We'll do less with process and dig more into specifics. If there's anything else that's helpful this time of year, it's a weird time because everyone's problems are different on the wire. Like the handful of really good players that pop up, they're probably not available in my league if they're available in yours, and vice versa. So be sure to send us questions. We'll help you out as much as we possibly can. Thanks for listening. We're back with you on Tuesday with Under the Radar.